Welcome, everybody, to a holiday edition of Everything You Need to Know. I hope all of you are having a wonderful weekend on this Memorial Day, and we are very excited here on the program. I'm going to do something a little different this week because several years ago, my radio partner Terry Quillian and I put together what I think is an extraordinary tribute to the people who have given the last full measure of devotion, laid down their lives to preserve the freedoms and liberties that we all enjoy as Americans. And we wanted to do a special tribute to talk about the origins of Memorial Day, as well as highlight some great speeches and statements that have been made. We did an hour program for the time that we have available here on Need to Know. We've cut that down to about a 30-minute presentation, but I think you're really going to enjoy it, the rebroadcast of our program for Memorial Day. And if you're catching this later in the week here on Tony Curry Radio, I hope you will keep in mind that every day for all Americans should be Memorial Day, because of the ultimate sacrifice all of these fantastic heroes made for us to preserve our way of life, and this way of life in this incredible experiment we call the United States of America for all of our future descendants and or ascendants and generations to come. So without further ado, Kip Kiefer, Terry Quillian, our Memorial Day tribute to our greatest heroes. Welcome, everybody, to our special The Ride Home edition of Memorial Day as we talk about America's heroes on this very special American holiday. Kip Kiefer with Terry Quillian here. I think we've got some great stuff put together, and I hope you enjoy the next hour with us. Terry, to kind of set the tone and lead things off, I don't think there's ever been a more eloquent spokesman in American history, and it's somebody that you're highly familiar with.
If we get to start with, as Margaret Thatcher called him, the Great Liberator, Ronald Reagan, the Gipper, whatever we want to call him, he's still the guy responsible for liberating almost an entire continent in Europe from behind the Iron Curtain, excuse me, and restoring our country's military, and I think really restoring the feelings of patriotism on the part of a lot of Americans.
If we look to the answer as to why for so many years we achieved so much, prospered as no other people on earth, it was because here in this land, we unleashed the energy and individual genius of man to a greater extent than has ever been done before. Freedom and the dignity of the individual have been more available and assured here than in any other place on earth. The price for this freedom at times has been high, but we have never been unwilling to pay that price. Those who say that we're in a time when there are no heroes, they just don't know where to look. The sloping hills of Arlington National Cemetery, with its row upon row of simple white markers bearing crosses or stars of David, they add up to only a tiny fraction of the price that has been paid for our freedom. Each one of those markers is a monument to the kind of hero I spoke of earlier. Their lives ended in places called Belleau Wood, the Argonne, Omaha Beach, Salerno, and halfway around the world on Guadalcanal, Tarawa, Porkchop Hill, the Chosin Reservoir, and in 100 rice paddies and jungles of a place called Vietnam. Under one such marker lies a young man, Martin Treptow, who left his job in a small town barber shop in 1917 to go to France with the famed Rainbow Division. There on the Western Front, he was killed trying to carry a message between battalions under heavy artillery fire. We're told that on his body was found a diary. On the flyleaf, under the heading, My Pledge, he had written these words: America must win this war. Therefore, I will work, I will save, I will sacrifice, I will endure. I will fight cheerfully, and do my utmost as if the issue of the whole struggle depended on me alone. We must realize that no arsenal or no weapon in the arsenals of the world is so formidable as the will and moral courage of free men and women. It is a weapon our adversaries in today's world do not have. It is a weapon that we as Americans do have. Let that be understood by those who practice terrorism and prey upon their neighbors. As for the enemies of freedom, those who are potential adversaries, they will be reminded that peace is the highest aspiration of the American people. We will negotiate for it, sacrifice for it. We will not surrender for it now or ever. We are Americans.
Nobody frames it better than Ronald Reagan. It's Memorial Day. We are honored to be here to pay tribute to our fallen heroes that have really defined and allowed all of us the liberties and freedoms that we enjoy every day here in America. And Terry, I know you've got really strong thoughts on what this day means and should mean to all of us.
I find myself frustrated on a lot of Memorial Days because you go out and I think that so many Americans just take it for granted. Memorial Day is a day that you get to have off from work and you get to be out on the lake or in the boat, drinking beer, having fun. And there's nothing wrong with those things as long as it's also wedded with remembering what Memorial Day is supposed to be about.
Yeah, you know, history tells us that Memorial Day began shortly after the Civil War and for many, many years was called Decoration Day. Yes, there was a barbecue in most towns, and it really started in true American tradition because it was community-based. It wasn't a national holiday. This is amazed me. This was not an official federal holiday, Terry, until 1971. So it really started off a lot more kind of communal, low-key situation, and communities had a parade and a barbecue to honor veterans and remember the dead, but it always included flags and flowers on cemeteries of fallen heroes. And so those are the purest origins and really puts in perspective what the day's about.
And I feel like so much of that has been lost. I wonder if it was actually a good thing that it was turned into a national holiday. I feel like when it's turned into a national holiday, it becomes kind of like the way they do it in Europe. And in England, it's interesting to me, none of the holidays have names. It's a bank holiday.
Huh.
And they've managed to sort of like neutralize all the holidays by just calling it a bank holiday. And I'll always be asking, but what's the holiday for? What's it about? And I feel like we are in such danger of doing that with our holidays. And of all the holidays, Memorial Day is one that we want to really think about. What's the day supposed to be about?
For sure. And these are such tumultuous times and people will argue that this is a divided nation. But this is something certainly remembering the people that made all of everything we enjoy possible. This is a day that everything should be set aside and everybody should be on the same page.
Well, I feel like we're more on the same page now. I'm curious to see what you think than in many, many years past. I've never seen the American people in my lifetime be as supportive of the men and women in the American military as Americans are today. I feel like you see many, many more people who, it may not be the top of their mind, but they are appreciative of American service people. And you'll notice that even in the way they're treated at airports and in public places, that there's a difference in the level of respect that Americans have every day for our service people than, for example, during the Vietnam War era.
Yeah, and again, and we've said it on our show several times, we believe that every day should be Veterans Day. Every day. But this day is special for the people that gave the last full measure, in Lincoln's words, the people that made the ultimate sacrifice. This is the day where they need to be front and center and truly remembered.
And I think it's special for their families for that reason as well, that this is the day that's set aside for honoring and remembering the sacrifice that they made. I love it. One of the quotes from the great Chris Kyle is that the members of the American military don't choose the battle. What they choose to do is to be willing to give up everything, where they live, where they are, even their life, for the people of the United States of America. But they don't pick the battles after that. And I think that's a really important thing for us to remember, is that members of our military sign up not knowing what they're necessarily signing up for. They don't sign up and say, well, I'll go anywhere except Fallujah.
Exactly.
I'll go anywhere except Mosul. I don't want anything to do with that conflict going on in Sudan. When the members of the American military sign up, they're signing away everything when they do that.
Incredible. Hope you're having a wonderful Memorial Day and are taking time to reflect on all of the wonderful things that being an American entail, including remembering our fallen heroes that we're honoring here today. This is a painful subject for Terry from one standpoint, because this holiday basically emanated from honoring those Union guys from the Civil War.
Which is okay. Just before anybody thinks differently, I don't fly a Confederate flag. I'm glad that the Union won. I don't want to put me in that bucket. I'm not one of those people.
Yeah, I checked Terry's car when she pulled in it. She does not have a Forget Hell bumper sticker.
I do not. I do not. I'm not in that bucket. However, I can't help it. I feel like I can't help but know it's a Yankee holiday.
Yeah, that's how it started.
Yes, that's how it started.
Yeah, that's for sure. Because, you know, so much of what became Decoration Day began on November 19th, 1863, in a quaint little Pennsylvania town called Gettysburg. And it's a really interesting story. But, and Terry, you know, a lot of historians regard the Gettysburg Address, which was just 272 words, supposedly only took Abraham Lincoln 2 minutes and 19 seconds to deliver, as the greatest speech in American history.
I would agree that it is the greatest speech ever given by an American president. The only question I think we have is exactly how many words there were and what that speech is. We have five different texts, I think, of Lincoln's written remarks, but we don't know what he actually said. I mean, there weren't teleprompters in those days.
No.
No
newsreels.
There are no newsreels. And Lincoln could very easily have gone off script, as there are reporters who you've talked to me about whose version includes words that aren't in the Bliss version, which is the version of the Gettysburg Address that we typically memorize and state.
There's amazing facts about the Gettysburg Address, and the biggest one to me is it came very close to never happening. The circumstances were pretty bizarre when the committee, which was made up of local leaders in Gettysburg and state officials of Pennsylvania, when the battle ended on July 3rd, 1863, this tiny little town had this terrible problem. They had tens of thousands of deceased and wounded soldiers to deal with, this small community. And they quickly assembled the resources to put together a cemetery. They did a great job of organizing it by state. But it was a major project, and it took several months to start to inter the dead. And when that happened, they wanted to commemorate it. But at the time, you know, people, it's hard to imagine now, but people, Abraham Lincoln had been president for 3 years, but nobody had heard him speak. We didn't have radio. We didn't have, you know, television. We didn't have any kind of, so he kind of had this label, especially in parts of the country that had never seen or heard him, of being some kind of hick from Illinois. And they thought he would detract from the ceremony by inviting him, the president of the United States, to speak. So they invited a guy named Edward Everett, who was at the time like a rock star. He was a Harvard graduate. He was a senator at the time. He had been governor of Massachusetts for four terms. And so they didn't think Lincoln was appropriate to even have at the ceremony.
But you know what? Edward Everett turned out to be sort of the Fidel Castro of speech making
that
day.
That's true.
I mean, that's what I really think about. Because, you know, we see all these speeches where Fidel goes on for hours and hours, and supposedly the followers are just listening in rapt attention. What was it, 2 hours that Everett spoke before Lincoln got to give
that? 2 hours and 4 minutes, supposedly.
2 hours and 4 minutes.
Can you imagine sitting there?
Oh, my gosh. And then, can you imagine the difference? There's a guy that's droning on and on who's supposedly the great speaker. First of all, nobody wants to listen to somebody speak for 2 hours and 4 minutes. I mean, think about it. That's the average length of a Shakespearean play.
Oh.
And the reason it was limited to 2 hours in the days that he wrote were because, of course, all the audience members had to stand. And that was considered to be the maximum amount of time that one could stand. and watch an entire play unfold in front of you. This is not standing and listening to one person talk. So he goes, and Everett gives kind of the Castro version of the two-hour speech. And then you get Abraham Lincoln with his humility and his power and force that gives the two-minute speech of the century.
Absolutely. And when Lincoln finished his remarks, he sat back down next to Secretary of War Edwin Stanton, who had accompanied him, and he said, "That didn't scour," which at the time meant that was a plowing term. When you would try to plow your field and you didn't get deep enough to plant your crop, then it was he thought he was a failure because he just got a smattering of applause and it didn't really sink in right away for people that the effect of that. But
no wonder he just got a smattering of applause. They were exhausted.
That's a great point.
They listened to 2 hours and 4 minutes of somebody speaking before him.
That's a great point.
A hard position on the platform to be in when you're following somebody who's spoken for 2 hours.
So November 19th was the occasion. He did not receive the invitation at the White House until November 5th, just 2 weeks before. And it said, "Would you come and make a few," that's the key word, "appropriate remarks." This is the president.
Inappropriate,
right. Yeah. So the
Can
greatest.
Can you imagine right now Donald Trump listening to somebody else talk for 2 hours before he spoke?
I can't even imagine.
I can tell you right now, George W. Bush wouldn't have done that. We knew that when the people were introducing him, we were warning them, it's got to be really short and sweet. 2 hours? No.
Well, I mean, when he stood and even some newspaper accounts the next day said it was dishwater and it was, you know, he doesn't understand the occasion. And boy, so journalism was not only flawed in this era, but certainly there were some questionable opinions then.
I did not know about this, but Kip, that is really fascinating because what it leads me to believe is that what we see as the modern media era of criticism of the president has a long history.
It sure does. Well, let's listen to the speech. I think this is a dramatic version. Hope you all enjoy it.
Four score and 7 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. Now we are engaged in a great civil war, testing whether that nation, or any nation so conceived and so dedicated, can long endure. We are met on a great battlefield of that war. We have come to dedicate a portion of that field as a final resting place for those who here gave their lives that that nation might live. It is altogether fitting and proper that we should do this. But in a larger sense, we cannot dedicate, we cannot consecrate, we cannot hallow this ground. The brave men, living and dead, who struggled here, have consecrated it far above our poor power to add or detract. The world will little note nor long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here. It is for us, the living, rather, to be dedicated here to the unfinished work which they who fought here have thus far so nobly advanced. It is rather for us to be here, dedicated to the great task remaining before us, that from these honored dead, we take increased devotion to that cause for which they gave the last full measure of devotion. That we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain. That this nation, under God, shall have a new birth of freedom. And that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.